This is Arsene Wenger. Welcome to FIFA Training Center.
You're listening to FIFA Insight Live, a Training Center podcast. Throughout the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar, we're taking you inside the game like never before. This fly-on-the-wall audio experience puts you inside the car with our team of experts as they travel to all 64 matches at the FIFA World Cup. The final whistle has blown in the game between Ghana and Uruguay. You are now entering the minds of some of the world's finest football brains.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Mark Roberts, and with us tonight, as we leave the Al Janoub Stadium, is Sundi Alisai, Alberto Zaccheroni, Farid Mondragon, and helping to bring our data to life, FIFA's Chris Loxton and Harry Lowe, where we have just watched Uruguay and Ghana crash out of the World Cup after a late career Republic goal against Portugal. For our game, 12 years on from their only previous encounter in Johannesburg, it was another match full of events. And let's start with the first. Farid, earlier this week we discussed the challenges for goalkeepers with this particular style of penalty. What impressed you, I guess, in terms of how the Uruguayan goalkeeper dealt with this?
I have so many thoughts in this particular situation. First of all, I think the Ayew, the Ghana captain, number 10, didn't confront this particular situation as it really was, because they were playing their qualification game. It was so important to open the score, to put the game on the rhythm, on their side, and the attitude, the pace that he took the penalty always gives a goalkeeper much more chance. Even though I have a little detail to share with you guys, the ball before arriving Rochette's hands makes one bounce, so that means the shoot was not a clear shoot, was a firm shot. Of course, there's a merit from the goalkeeper waiting until the last moment and going in the correct side. This was determinant for the game, determinant for the Uruguay spirit, determinant for putting very low Ghana spirit also. And also, this was decisive for the future of the immediate future of the game. This kind of actions from a goalkeeper, I think they are not only very, very positive, but very relevant and a game changer.
And you said it started to swing from that point. But Sunday, I guess, challenges in that first half for Ghana tonight. Tell us what you observed.
Well, I saw a Ghanaian team that came out with a 4-2-3-1 system of play, and they stayed 4-2-3-1 with the ball, 4-2-3-1 without the ball. There was no animation that made them mix, whereby the just clear demarcations of the team, and that made them very static, made them very predictable, and there was very little movement, and the ball circulation was very slow. This made it really, for a team that needed to win, I think this made it a lot easier for the opposition to handle. What impressed me the most was the movement of just one player, Mohamed Kudus. He was in front all alone, and he was just a player that, in my opinion, I feel we are looking at probably the next superstar coming out of Ghana. He's very, very impressive. When the Ghanaians had the ball, they had very few players ahead of the ball. So they couldn't circulate, they couldn't really construct well. When they didn't have the ball, they were very far away from their opposition. So that means the opponents were playable and they could control, and then they reacted. They went compact, but not positioned in a way that they could anticipate when the ball came in. And that made it late for them. They came late to the balls. That made it impossible for them to even have any organized form of pressing. And when you don't have that at this level of world soccer, I think it becomes very, very difficult to manage a game. And that is why they conceded two goals.
And just a question on the first half as well, Sandy. You made a great observation when we were chatting around, I guess, the structure defensively of Ghana, and the need to potentially animate slightly more to obviously cause Uruguay problems as well.
Yeah, the structure of the animation of the team was really not... it could have been better. Could have been much, much better. And that made it easier for the opposition who needed to win, to be able to penetrate and to find balls. You know, they could play players in the zones. They had players. The players had passing lines. The opposition had passing lines. I don't want to go into the lines of what Mister is going to say later on, but the positioning and the way the Ghanaians stood tactically and the way they animated their own defensive network made it easier for the opposition to play.
Thank you. And I think it was a great insight as well. You have that set structure, but how you animate from it is really important as well. You know? And Alberto, you observed Uruguay for us tonight. Your insight on that performance?
Io ho seguito il più l'Uruguay che è presentato in campo con un 4-4-2.
Follow the Uruguayan team that when defensively they went on a 4-4-2 and when they went offensive they went on a 4-2-4.
L'Uruguay rispetto al Ghana, secondo me, e questo gli ha permesso.
The approach of the Uruguayans was much, much better than that what the Ghanaians presented, and they had more capabilities to go vertically, to go forwards, and you know, to attack, especially with Betancourt in the midfield, and they dominated the game from there. Got it.
Potuto stare in posizione avanzata.
Well, the first half they dominated the game. They were able to manage it because of the way they were playing vertically. The second half was a different story. The game became more, you know, had more balance.
La partita è stata sua. Nel secondo tempo è cambiata perché la squadra avversaria, il Ghana, è entrato in campo con.
Well, Uruguay held on and they dominated, continued to dominate, and using the wings, and that was okay.
E i due centrocampisti esterni dell'Uruguay hanno dovuto anche loro rientrare a difendere. Sempre l'Uruguay.
Well, the decisive point was more the temperament, the psychological and the mental attitude they brought into the game that helped them to dominate. They had a better mental setup.
La squadra ha giocato con grande grinta e grande determinazione. Il punto debole.
Weak points were that the two of the offensive midfielders did not help out much.
And Harry, one of our previous podcasts, observing Uruguay, we observed they set up with a single striker tonight. As Alberto discussed, they changed to two. How did that slight tactical change affect what you picked up?
Well, what we saw as a result of that change were more central penetration. So we saw that we had two line breaks in the first game for Uruguay that went through the opponent's team shape. And compared to this match, we saw 15 line breaks through. So maybe that had the change up front, or with Darwin Núñez maybe playing closer to Suarez, maybe impacted their ability to play through the middle or play through Ghana. And as well, we saw, and this was just in the first half, by the way, we saw one central entry into the final third of Uruguay in their first match. And this time, by the time it got to halftime, we had five. So again, showing that central penetration for Uruguay. Just something to note, though, the receptions of the two players was very similar to the first match. So again, getting on the ball wasn't necessarily a big change for them, but they were able to get through the opponent a bit more in this match.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Thank you as always, Harry. And Sunday, did you observe anything different from Ghana's second half?
Well, the Ghanaians today, we could just give them, they came with two teams. Almost the same players, but two teams. In the first half, we saw them play with, like I said earlier, the 4-2-3-1. The three players who were just behind the point striker, who is Kudus, these three were very, very static. Second half, the coach came out and he took away two of them, brought in two new players in, and took away the two IU brothers, and we saw a totally different team. More enterprising. Now the demarcations were no longer there like they pronounced like they were in the first half. I mean, as regards the lines, the midfield, the defense, and the attack, they were now kind of like fluid because they were now interwoven. They moved amongst themselves. You had a lot of very penetrative, and then they brought something that really, really kind of put the Uruguayans under pressure. They started now taking on one-on-ones. You know, they became unpredictable, and Kudus just really let it go. He was the lone striker, lone player in the first half. Second half, now he had people supporting him, so they put a lot of pressure. It was a total different team. I was left with one point in thought at the end of the game. I asked myself, what would have happened if Ghana had played the team they used in the second half from the onset? I think we might have seen, that we'll never know, but we might have had a total different story. because it was a much, much better competitive team that applied several principles of attacking. Defensively stayed almost the same, but attacking, they were much, much better.
And Sunday, just last question to yourself. We were chatting during the game. We've chatted throughout these podcasts around the calculators and the different varieties that can come up. Very, very difficult for Uruguay. I think obviously they understood that, that the information came through to the ground around about the 91st minute that they knew they'd conceded and almost lost out on that position to qualify. How difficult is that then to manage for that final 6-7 minutes and I guess continue to drive forward and get that goal that you need?
Well, that's one of the most difficult things in football. And well, we say football is played in the head, not in the legs, because eventually it's the head that's going to tell the legs move or stand. So that is really what happened in this game. We could see that at one point when it became clear that, okay, the Uruguayans needed one more goal to qualify. Taking into account, now we're talking about psychology, 12 years ago, these two teams were bitter enemies. They became bitter enemies. And today, it was like, okay, if we are not qualifying, you are not qualifying either. So the Ghanaians were like, no need to rush. We'll take our time, even though we're losing. We'll take our time. It's part of the rules. And then the coach did something that I found quite interesting. He started making changes at the end, and then players were taking their time, the goalkeeper, just to slow it down and then bring into the psychological pain now. And that's unfortunate.
Definitely. And it definitely did affect that decision making, I guess, in the final third when they started to progress. And thank you for that as well. And Farid, we discussed the penalty earlier on, but your thoughts on the two goalkeepers on show tonight?
Well, for the Uruguayan goalkeeper, I still believe this is a style and a kind of goalkeeper is very good underneath of his posts. And he's struggling very much when he has to play with his feet, when he has to come in extreme situations to punch or to get crosses. Good reflex, good positioning, but a very old style, classic goalkeeping from him. Sigi, I think he has shown us that he's going better and better. He's very agile, good reflexes, improving very much with his feet, delivering good balls. Unlucky for him that he didn't have the chance to keep showing himself in this World Cup, but I think he has great, great potential, and that means that he has been training well, preparing well. He has been adapting to each different technical situations or technical strategies or tactical shapes that even on his club or the national team they have been playing. And I think he made a very, very good, most than decent tournament.
Thank you. Thank you as always, Farid. And Chris, we were chatting during the game around, I guess, ongoing tournament trends, and something else stood out for you tonight?
Yeah, well, I think we're seeing the resurgence of the 4-4-2, certainly in a defensive structure. And, you know, we've seen, for example, Poland using this shape, Japan against Spain last night with five, you know, and I mean really solidly looking to defend. You know, after that second goal, they scored 25, 30 minutes staying in that shape, but it was in their hands last night, whereas Uruguay tonight, you know, it was a risk. You know, they looked, Portugal were winning, they scored early and they sat in that 4-4-2 and they defended very well in the 4-4-2. However, the result wasn't in their hands tonight, and you know, obviously Sunday said it, when they then had to start and come out and try and attack, it's hard to go from being in such a defensive mindset to then having to switch on. And obviously Suarez had been brought off as well, so but yeah, I think, look, we're seeing teams really take the lead and sit, and it's going to be interesting now how this runs into the knockout stages where, you know, teams go 1-0 up, 2-0 up, and are they going to sit or are they going to try and kill the game? I think that's going to be something really interesting to look at.
No more calculators.
Be nice to finally put them away. And guys, thank you as always. Fantastic insight. So as we head to the LaSalle iconic stadium to observe Group G, and conclude actually what has been an unbelievable night once again of football when Portugal and Korea Republic progress to the round of 16. From myself, Mark Roberts, Sunday, Alberto, Farid, Chris and Harry, we wish you a good evening and we'll see you again tonight.
You've been listening to FIFA Insight Live, a Highway 61 production for FIFA Training Centre. For more information and insights throughout the 2022 FIFA World Cup, visit fifatrainingcentre.com.